It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, I'll talk with IPR's resident blues man, Bob Doerr, about his favorite new blues releases of 2020. But first, Kendall Demery is an intensive care unit nurse at University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She has been an ICU nurse for the last 9 years, but the last 9 months have been unlike anything she's experienced before. She's here with us today to share her experiences and her insight. Kendall, hello.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you so much for being here. And take us back in time before the pandemic struck. A lot of people, of course, have never been in an intensive care unit. People who are fortunate have been and never been in an intensive care unit. What is working in an ICU normally like?
So normally before the pandemic, working in an ICU was, as you said, tough at baseline. But we saw our fair share of positive results and negative results. We have patients that die on our floor, that live and move on and go about their lives. And so that's nothing new for us. But the pandemic definitely brought on another level of that. We see a lot more death and dying in our ICU than we had before the pandemic.
What drew you to working in an intensive care unit? What made you make that choice?
So I don't know that I necessarily chose working in an ICU as much as it chose me. I didn't really know what area of nursing I wanted to go into when I graduated from my bachelor's program at Iowa. And I happened to choose an internship in the intensive care unit, which I was given, and found that I really enjoyed it. I found it to be challenging, and I found it to be incredibly educational. I think I learned something new every day in the ICU, even 9 years into my career. Our patients are complicated, and they're incredibly resilient. And I think working with that population has really driven my nursing career in a positive light, and that's what keeps me there, as well as my incredible coworkers. I have to give a shout out to them. I just think they're the most amazing people.
I can imagine that there's a real closeness that comes with working in the ICU because, again, even before the pandemic, together as a team, you go through some really intense experiences.
Absolutely. The people that I work with in the intensive care unit are incredible. They become a sounding board for negative and positive experiences. Of course, with privacy laws, it's difficult to go home and discuss the experiences that we have with our families necessarily, but it's a relief to know that we have these people that I work with so closely that can understand everything that I'm going through. I can understand what they're going through. We have incredible teamwork on our floor and a great bunch of people.
Now, you are working in Johnson County, and Johnson County is where the first cases of COVID-19 appeared in the state of Iowa. Leading up to those cases, though, a lot of us had our eyes on China and were following along with everything that was happening there and how scary, just incredibly scary it was. Leading up to when COVID-19 really struck in Iowa, what were you guys in the ICU doing to prepare?
Yes. So we were watching China. We were watching what was going on over there. Our institution was very good in preparing us to make sure that we knew what kind of personal protective equipment we needed to be wearing into these rooms. We were making sure each of our rooms in the intensive care unit had negative airflow and were ready to take on this onslaught. We were preparing with staff to make sure that we had enough people on board to take care of these patients. that was really helpful to just to see how we were doing in preparing for what this onslaught was going to be.
One of the things that we immediately started hearing about from hospitals everywhere was a shortage of personal protection equipment. In Iowa City, at the hospital, how did that go for you? Were you able to get enough PPE to feel like you were doing your job safely?
We were. I think we were lucky that we had as much as we did. I never had to go into a COVID patient's room without the proper protective equipment during these last nine months. And I think that has added a level of security and comfort with being at work in general during this time. We've always had what we needed, and our infectious disease specialists and our epidemiologists have been at the forefront of making sure that we are protected and we are able to do our job safely.
What's it like to work in all of that PPE? I mean, that is just a vastly different kind of environment than you'd ever experienced before, at least for the most part.
Absolutely. It's hot.
I think I've lost my computer connection with Kendall, so we'll move over to a backup phone line that we have and see if we can reconnect here in a moment. I'm talking with Kendall Demery. She is an intensive care unit nurse at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. She has been an ICU nurse for the last 9 years, but of course, for the last 9 months, most of her work has been focused on dealing with patients who have COVID-19. And we're going to take a short break here because, of course, she is having a hard time reconnecting with us on the telephone line, but we will get her back in just a moment. Coming up in about 30 minutes, we will be talking about the best new blues music of 2020 with Bob Dorr, Iowa Public Radio's resident blues man. Kendall, are you back?
I'm back. Yes, yay. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm not sure what happened.
That's all right. These things happen, especially in 2020. They happen all the time. Anyway, so let me re-ask my question. You and your colleagues have been doing work in wearing so much personal protection or protective equipment. What is that like?
Yeah, so as I think that I was saying, it's very hot. We get a little bit sweaty in those rooms when we're in there working with our patients. What we do is very physical. We are in those rooms for long periods of time, turning our patients, flipping our patients, making sure they're getting all the medications that they need, and wearing a gown, a mask, a face shield can be a little bit constricting, but any more 9 months in, it feels like habit and almost like we've always been doing it, really.
Well, and I hope you are not always doing it in the future. As COVID cases began to build in Iowa, of course, some of them became very serious. We have lost many Iowans to this disease, and a lot of the most critically ill Iowans wound up in an ICU and University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics ICU. You accept patients from around the state who need your help. Tell me what it was like as things really began to build.
As the cases increased in Iowa and as we started to admit more of these patients into our ICU, we were faced with a level of illness that we have encountered. We've seen patients that have been this sick in the past, but it was the number of these sick patients that was really difficult for us to deal with. Like I said, these patients are going through an illness that we're able to do things about. We know how to treat these patients, but there are so many of them, and they got so sick so quickly. That was probably the most difficult thing for us to deal with, was just having the sheer volume of patients that we were having to treat.
How many beds have been full in the ICU?
So at the university, we have three adult intensive care units. my medical ICU is one of those three. And in that ICU, we have 26 beds. Recently, around the Thanksgiving surge, we expanded to another 10 beds. And so we went from a 26-bed unit to a 36-bed unit, and they were full. Granted, not every single one of those beds was necessarily a COVID patient. We still obviously have patients that are sick with things other than COVID that need to come to the intensive care unit. But we have been full, all of our 36 beds.
Wow. And as you mentioned before, of course, normally you would have a variety of challenges in the ICU, but to have that many patients have the same thing, how does that feel?
It's incredibly difficult. It's not only physically exhausting, it's mentally exhausting and emotionally exhausting to care for these poor patients. They were, like you said, we're taking care of so many of them at the same time, and we're doing the same thing with them. But that those tools involved with taking care of them require a lot of personnel. When we turn a patient onto their stomach, it's not like someone turning over in their bed to sleep on their stomach. These patients they're hooked up to ventilators. They have breathing tubes. They have big IVs in their necks that are connected to all of these drips that are helping to keep them safe and keep them alive, and requires at least 4 or 6 nurses and a respiratory therapist to turn these people onto their bellies, and then vice versa to turn them back onto their backs. It's been incredibly challenging.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in just a few minutes, Kendall. So hang on the line. I'm talking with Kendall Demery, an intensive care unit nurse at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. We're talking about what the last 9 months of being an ICU nurse in the midst of this terrible pandemic has been like for her. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Iowa Public Radio is fundraising right now, and we could really use your support. The pace of news will not let up, and neither will we. Show your support for this service when you donate now at iowapublicradio.org. Thank you.
With me now is Kendall Demery. She's an intensive care unit nurse at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics, and she's been working in the ICU for the last 9 years. Of course, the last 9 months have been like nothing else, dealing with COVID-19 and a massive influx of patients. And Kendall, before the break, we were talking about just how many COVID patients you've had on the floor. Do you have enough staff to take care of all of these patients?
We do have enough staff. We have had to pull staff in who've had previous ICU experience back to the bedside from either the clinics, or we've been utilizing a lot of our nurse anesthetists, who all have to have intensive care unit experience before they go to school to become a nurse anesthetist. We've been bringing those people back to the bedside to help staff our units to take care of these patients. So not only do we have our regular staff, but we also have these cross-trained nurses and advanced practice providers coming back to the bedside to help us.
Have you had colleagues get sick?
I have had some colleagues get sick. Thankfully, no one has been ill enough to require a hospital admission or anything like that. And all of those cases, as far as I'm aware, have been transmitted from outside of the hospital. But that definitely hurt us a little bit when we would lose those staff for whatever period of time that they had to be out of work.
Yeah. And of course, you're dealing with the very sickest of patients. I don't know if there's a way to quantify this. Death is something you've always had to deal with in the intensive care unit. But can you Can you try to describe how much more of that you've been living through and you know, investing yourself in these people's care and then losing them? How is what has that been like?
It's been awful. It's really taken a toll on all of us in the healthcare field that work with these patients. Unfortunately, we don't get to learn as much about these patients and their lives as we once did with our visitor restrictions. We don't get to talk to their families as often as we would like to about the person that we're taking care of. But we work so hard to try to keep these patients alive, and we're doing all the right things, and we're doing everything that we know how to do to take care of them and keep them with us. But this virus doesn't play favorites, and it doesn't always seem to have a rhyme or reason for who it takes and who it leaves behind. But it's really taking a toll on all of us.
How have you dealt with that? That's obviously not something that you leave at work.
No, it's been increasingly difficult to leave work at work for the last 9 months. Personally, I've found therapy to be incredibly helpful. I try to exercise as regularly as I can. I try to eat well, just those normal, simple things that that everyone tries to do to get through difficult times. I found to be really helpful. I write letters to patients and their families. I never send any of them, but I write them to be able to put down some of these emotions that I'm going through, some of these thoughts, and apologize for not being able to help them get through this.
Apologize.
It feels like we're letting people down, and I know that that's not out of our control most of the time, but it's very difficult not to feel that way when your biggest goal is to make sure that you're doing the best thing that you possibly can for these patients and taking care of them and giving them back the life that they had before this virus. And when we can't do that, it feels incredibly discouraging.
I hope you do know how incredibly grateful most of us are for the work that you've been doing, Kendall, and everyone trying to help patients. And maybe that doesn't help very much when you're dealing with the reality of this every day, but I hope that you understand that. And I hope you know how grateful we are.
I do think it still helps to hear that from people and to see people doing everything that they can to mitigate this virus and help us out. Absolutely.
I have spent some time waiting for a loved one in the ICU in the past. And one of the things that stands out very clearly to me is the waiting room at the ICU when my father was there. And it was full of families. And it was a very comforting, comfortable place. And people shared bonds and supported each other. And it was a sad place, but it was a happy place sometimes. And it was just a real place of community that the hospital was able to provide. And during this pandemic, that hasn't been something that the hospital has been able to provide. How has the fact that at least for a long time, family members weren't allowed into the hospital when their loved ones were in the ICU. How has that changed your work?
It's been difficult. We appreciate families being able to be there and be at the bedside of their loved one and being able to speak to us about their wants and their needs and be a supportive person for them as well as for the other family members. So during this pandemic, we've at least at the beginning, started using iPads to go into the rooms so that patients could speak with their family members, or if they were intubated and on a ventilator, at least have their family members be able to see them and see what they looked like. And that's just no replacement for being able to have your family member with you, holding your hand, and speaking directly to you. It works. It's the means that we have available to us, and we use it. But it's definitely not the ideal scenario.
Has that changed recently? Are family members able to see their loved ones?
Yes. So we were able to start to allow visitors what feels like early on in the pandemic. The time all seems to blend together. We were able to allow visitors. Originally, COVID patients were not allowed visitors, but that also has changed. And someone is at least able to come, one person, to see a COVID positive patient for an hour every day, which in the grand scheme of a day of 24 hours, 1 hour next to your loved one is also not very much, but at least it's something we're able to provide. And if our patient is close to death or is dying, they are able to have a loved one outside of those hours the majority of the time to be able to come and be with them.
We do have this light at the end of the tunnel. The vaccine has started being distributed, and of course it's not going to go nearly as fast as we want it to, but you did get your first dose of the vaccine last week. Tell me what that was like.
I did. That moment was the lightest my heart has felt in 9 months. I was hit with many different emotions, from sad to happy to excited to nervous, all at the same time. And it was overwhelming, but in the most positive way that I can think of, to be able to get that vaccine.
Did your body have an immune response? Did you experience something in the 24 hours or so after the shot?
No, I felt pretty good afterwards. I did have soreness in my arm, which is what I'm hearing from many of my coworkers who have also received the vaccine. And I had a slight headache, but nothing that wasn't manageable for a day, and nothing that I would have needed to be off of work for by any means. So I feel lucky and also glad that that is how I responded.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, every time I get my flu shot, I usually feel a little crummy the next day, and I think, good, it's working.
So, exactly. Exactly. Yes.
That's probably a good thing. But the getting the vaccine, of course, is a huge step forward. It's an incredible achievement in medicine and in science, but it doesn't solve the pandemic, at least not yet. What are your concerns heading into the darkest months of the winter?
I am worried that people will view this vaccine, and I think this is throughout the healthcare community, this is our fear, that people are going to receive this vaccine and think that we can stop wearing a mask, we can stop social distancing, and we can stop doing all of the measures that we're doing at the moment to mitigate the virus. That's just not the case. We won't have any type of herd immunity until the majority of people have received this vaccine. So I want people to make sure that it's almost Christmas time, staying home for the holidays. And I know that that's hard. I know that it's difficult, but it's something that I think that we need to encourage people to do, to stay within their household, to celebrate, to be safe.
Throughout the pandemic, many of your colleagues, mostly infectious disease experts and epidemiologists, have found themselves not just trying to communicate with the public about this huge public health crisis, but caught up in the politics of it. This virus has been politicized in such really unfortunate ways. And I think about the incredible stress that medical providers are going through at this time, and then to also have that on top of it, even if you're not really on the front lines of trying to communicate that, you see the news reports and you hear the things. Has that been a real challenge for you and your colleagues mentally and emotionally to see so much misinformation?
Absolutely. It's been very hard for us, and we know that we see the sickest of the sick, and that thankfully the majority of the people that do get COVID-19 have mild symptoms, can recover at home, and then they're fine. We think. We really don't know the long-term effects right at this point, but it is incredibly frustrating to, I drive by the mall on my way to work every time that I go in, and I'm hopeful that everyone there is wearing a mask, but I see the sheer number of vehicles out there in the parking lot, and it makes my heart drop into my stomach, thinking they could be coming to see me in the intensive care unit in the next 10 to 14 days. It's been hard for us in the ICU.
How do you think this experience has changed you?
I think that we've seen so many people come into our intensive care unit, and unfortunately, some of those have been family members of my coworkers. And every patient that I see, I think, this could be my father, this could be my mother, this could be my aunt, uncle, brother, sister. But then when it's someone that you work with and it's their family member and they're at the bedside, you think, I have to take every phone call from the family. I have to be able to speak to them. I have to do my best to take care of this patient, because it's like I'm taking care of my own family. It makes you want to do everything within your power. And I think that for me personally, working as a nurse, working in the intensive care unit, I have an entirely new appreciation for how hard all of my coworkers work and how hard it is to take care of these patients.
Do you think that you will stay in the ICU?
I think that I will. I don't think that that's true across the board for some of my colleagues and for healthcare workers across the country. This has definitely taken a toll on all of us, and I think that many people are going to need to step away for some time, if not entirely, from the bedside because of what has happened during the last 9 months.
We have seen a recent jump in the number of students applying to medical schools. I don't know that the same can be said for nursing schools. Are you afraid that there could be a shortage, an even more serious shortage, because we've had nursing shortages for a long time in the future?
Absolutely. I hope that that's not the case. I really do. I hope that people are not only applying to medical school, but also consider nursing as a profession. I think at the end of the day, being a nurse at the bedside has not changed. The fundamentals are all still the same. We're caring for these patients. We're trying to be their voice when they can't speak and be their advocate and make sure that we're providing the best care possible for them, and trying to help in whatever scenario they might be in. So I think at the core of it, nursing hasn't changed, and I hope that this pandemic won't drive people away from being at the bedside.
Kendall, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity.
And thank you so much for all that you do. And I do hope that I know maybe we're not banging on pots and pans anymore and talking about heroes, but there is a grateful nation and a grateful state out here. And I hope that you and all of your colleagues know that. But thank you and Merry Christmas. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.